Lynn is a regular at our Saturday meeting. He always, he's one of those people who is a, I call a net giver. His hand is constantly extended, and one of the ways he does that is he sends out a text periodically, which at times I've ignored, but at other times I found very helpful. One thing, his most recent one was this. This sounds like complacency. We find this is in the rooms, in ourselves sometimes. It's a form of spiritual sickness that might that may ultimately lead me to drink. Please help make our recovered state strong and healthy. Boredom is a manifestation of selfishness. It can only occur when we are overly focused on ourselves. It always means that we have set God and neighbor aside to focus exclusively on ourselves, and that is never a recipe for happiness. By Matthew Kelly. And it's little things like that that, you know, again, have helped me. And so, in gratitude, I give you Glenn.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, everybody. My name is Glenn. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
I'm glad to be here, and I see a lot of friendly faces, so it's always nice to come to a meeting with a lot of friendly faces. I think I have about 30 or 40 minutes to share, so I'll give you kind of a cut-down version of my story. And hopefully for the alcoholic that still suffers out there in this room, hopefully I'll be able to share some insight with you about my experience, about what I've been through, to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and to actually find recovery within the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and to be in a recovered state that at this moment right now I never have to pick up another drink for the rest of my life. As long as I follow some simple steps that have been clearly outlined to me and I continue to work those steps as continuously, you know, on a continuous basis. So I want to start out by just kind of like getting everybody into a sense of kind of, you know, where I am today compared to where I was, okay? And there's something on page 143 that always jumps out at me and gives me kind of some insight. And then I'll also shift a little bit over to another page. But it says that he should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything. Without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. See, the kind of alcoholic that I was so selfish that I didn't care about that. I didn't care about anything. I didn't have a change of heart. The way I drank to excess. I was a reckless drunk. That's the way I was. And so now to be sitting here right now to have a change of attitude, to have all my thoughts and actions completely different than the way they used to be is a miracle. And it is the absolute gift of this program if we decide to just surrender and let it happen, you know. And that's the beauty of this program. There's one thing that kind of complements that as well, which I think is pretty powerful. So huge emotional, this is on page 27, huge emotional displacements or rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side. And a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. You know, I mean, that's exactly what's happened to me, and that's what's happening to me right now. I mean, that's the way I'm living my life today. And, you know, I grew up in a family that was, I would call dysfunctional. You know, I was introduced to alcohol at a very, very young age. I had a brother that was a couple of years older than I was. When I was 14 years old, my mother had another child. And so it was real easy for me to find ways to drink. And that became kind of the thing where it was like, hey, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, you know, and that just continued to happen throughout high school. And my drinking picked up. And I was the type of drinker that was unlike the tepid drinker that you hear in the doctor's opinion, right? I was the guy that if I was with a group of people and there was a case of beer, I would make sure I had as many of those as possible. Okay, that was my goal. And if we ran out of that, I would make sure that everyone who was with me would go buy more. And I'd convince them to go buy more. That's the way I drank. And that continued you know, right through college. I was the guy in college that always wanted to knock everybody off the quarters table if we were playing quarters at college, which was fun time, right? But I wanted to win at that game, and I wanted to continue to drink. So even when I didn't have to drink playing the game, I would drink, okay? And my goal was to make sure that I'd knock everybody off. That's just the way I drank. And I would say that I grew up in a fairly, you know, good home, even though it was dysfunctional. You know, my parents cared for me. They loved me. You know, I went to school. I went to college. I mean, all that was what you'd call normal, right? Inside our house, it was significantly different. My brother was an alcoholic drug addict as well. And he died of this disease at the age of 47. My other brother is an alcoholic as well. And he's the type of alcoholic that's a periodic alcoholic, where he'll drink a handle of vodka or a handle of bourbon at a time until it's completely finished. And then he goes on and he waits because he's in deep remorse. And I can remember I was that type of an alcoholic at one time too. I was a periodic drunk as well. And I would drink until everything was out of sight. I could not stop until it happened. So go back to the doctor's opinion, were you a drinker like me, where once I kicked in that craving, I just continued to drink until I didn't have any more. And then when I stopped drinking, it was a constant obsession to go find more, okay? Because I needed to go find more. And there'd be periods of what I'd call abstinence from drinking. Like as when I was in college at some point in time and I had to make sure I was going through an exam period, I would do that. When I actually went out and got a real job, right, there were some periods of time when that happened. There were some periods of time when I went to graduate school and I needed to stop drinking and I could do that for a while. There were times when my wife asked me not to drink anymore and I would stop drinking for a period of time. There were times when I knew that I would get in trouble at work and I would stop drinking for a period of time. But ultimately, it always led me back to another drink. Always. And it didn't go back to a drink that I was just like, hey, I'm just going to have a couple. You know, I was reflecting a little bit today and I thought a little bit about, I remember this business trip I was on. And I was like, hey, and I was by myself and I went to a restaurant and I had two beers. And I walked out of there, and I went home to my hotel. And I literally thought I had won, because I conquered alcohol that night. I won. I felt like I had won. That's the way I felt. And guess what? The next night I was drunk, right? The next night I was drunk. But I beat it that one time, and that's the way I felt. I felt good about that in myself. And, you know, so that was my drinking. I was introduced to AA in 1991. So, but I'll kind of back up a little bit. I have a history of getting into cars when I drink. And I have a history of driving cars off the road or driving cars into another car. I mean, these are signs that the normal person would say there's something wrong. When you're in college and you drive head on into another car, and you put it into reverse and you leave the site, and then you actually drive home and you back into your father's car, there might be a problem, okay? You might have a problem. And, you know, I can remember, because obviously the car actually drove home. I don't know how that happened. But we had to total the car immediately. It was undrivable after that incident. And I remember the fear that I had, because all I wanted to do was be a normal guy. I wanted to be such a normal guy. I couldn't wait to graduate from college and get a real job. I couldn't wait to, you know, someday have a family. All that stuff was the dream that was brought up in me, right? And so we called the police station. Guess what? No one reported a hit and run. Crazy, huh? What do you think that did to me? It said that it's okay. I can do that again. Okay, my next incident, you know, I was driving down the road and I was hugging a guardrail down the side of the road. Actually, it was a freeway. And for some reason, I bounced off and I was able to get myself home again. Okay, so I had all these warning signals too, that maybe it's not a good idea to drink. I started not coming home after I was married. I wouldn't come home. I'd go out all night. I'd come home, take a shower, go to work. I mean, that was kind of normal. I was literally putting my marriage at tremendous risk, and I didn't even care. I didn't care. When my wife found out that she was pregnant with my first child, I was nowhere to be found. So here it is, the most joyous moment in our lives, and I'm nowhere to be found, okay? So I'm painting a picture here of a guy that is very selfish, okay? It's all about me, and it's not about you. And that's the way I operated. By the way, this whole time I'd go to church on Sunday. You know, I thought I was a good guy. I literally thought the only thing that was troubling me in my life was the fact that alcohol was a problem, because it would lead me to problems. It would make my life unmanageable. Alcohol would make my life unmanageable. I did not realize internally, in my body, in my spirit, there was something wrong with me, okay? That was beyond the drink, okay? As they say, the symptom is the drink, right? But you have to look further than that, right? I didn't understand that one bit. So we had a little intervention with Glenn, and we met with a priest because I was a reckless drunk, and it was a good idea that maybe I attend an AA meeting. So I did. And, you know, I liked what you had to offer. I thought it was pretty neat. I instantly got sucked into this fellowship. I thought it was a wonderful place to be, and I spent the next 2 years sober. I'll say I spent the next 2 years dry. It's probably better to say that, right? I was actively going. I was actively participating, playing softball with you guys, playing golf with you guys. I was in. And I didn't work a step other than read them. I didn't actually look at myself and really do a thorough, fearless searching inventory at all. I didn't look at myself at all. You know what? Nobody told me to. And I had a sponsor. Nobody told me to. So after 2 years, I had a geographical move. I had a promotion with my company. Everything's good. I'm feeling pretty well. And, you know, I suddenly realized that, you know, maybe I'm a little bit older now. You know, maybe things are okay. Maybe it's okay to take a drink. You know, what do I do? So I am a chronic relapser. I go back out and I drink again. Guess what happens? Trouble happens. Because everywhere Glenn went, trouble followed. It didn't matter, right? Here comes my cars again. Driving down a road, and I ran out of road. I got to make a left turn. What do? I make a left turn. I take the whole suspension right off the car. All right? That's what I do. That's what I do. And I somehow, I get home, you know, and I'm like, I get this, what are you going to do, Glenn? Your life is, what are you doing? Here I was. I took my wife 2,700 miles away from her home. She knows nobody, and I'm out there drinking again. Talk about lonely. You know, talk about scared, right? Her whole life, she's in fear. I'll figure it out. Time goes on. I actually come back into the program, and I start working the steps with another man. And I thought that was enough, but there was something that was missing. I was holding something back. In fact, when we got to the third step, I was ready to do the fourth step, and he's like, Glenn, you haven't taken the third step yet. You're not at that point. God is not in your life today. You're still trying to control things. How many alcoholics continue to try to control things and expect a different outcome? When we don't surrender, we don't allow the miracle to happen. When we don't become willing, when we don't become teachable, the miracle doesn't come through, right? You know, and that was the biggest thing in my life, is that I was not teachable. I thought I had all the answers, you know. I was the big shot. I thought I could figure this all out, and I struggled with it. And I struggled with this internal clock. I used to keep these journals. I started keeping these journals when I started AA, and it's pretty amazing because I still have them. And you can actually see what happens to me when I start drinking again, and the remorse and the feelings that I have, and how could I do this again? Why can't I stop? what's wrong with me? But I couldn't ask for help. I really couldn't ask for help. I wasn't willing to let you see me raw, completely nude, completely exposed. I had a wall that came up, and I would never let you penetrate that wall. And I think that was all part of just the way I was brought up in my life. And so, again, moves happen again. Guess what happens to Glenn? Goes back out drinking again, right? And more accidents, more car situations. I moved to Atlanta, I had trouble. I moved to Ohio, I had trouble. I moved to California, I had trouble. I moved to Southern California. I'm there like maybe 10 days, and I get a DUI. And I blow the alcohol limit off the charts. I'm like inebriated to the nth degree. When I get out of jail, I have no shirt on. I have a pair of dress slacks on, and it's 11:30 in the afternoon, almost 12 o'clock, and I walk out into the public courtroom area or the public outside. All these people are dressed in business suits, women, men, and I have no shirt on. I was completely humiliated, and my wife comes and picks me up, and she says, you're going to take care of me, right? So guess what? I have to go through all kinds of alcohol treatment because it's state enforced, go to MAD, have to do my meetings, have to get things signed off. I had to go to a class for 6 months. I didn't learn a thing. 10 months later, I was drinking again after all those meetings. I was not willing to accept this. I thought I could figure out a better way. And so I'll speed up to my last drunk. So I'll ask you to close your eyes right now for a second. And I want you to think about the last time you picked up a drink, that feeling of hopelessness that you had, that feeling of complete humility or whatever the struggle was that you were encountering at that moment in time, and you're absolutely down in the ground, right? You had hit your bottom. And for some of us, we haven't hit our bottom yet. I know I hit my bottom. I absolutely know I hit my bottom. And so here I was. I was taking a rental car on a business trip. I had my wife drive me to the rental agency. I had my wife plead with me not to drink. By the way, that had happened many times before. Please don't drink, whatever you do. I couldn't wait to drink. I couldn't wait to get where I was going because the first thing I was going to do was drink. That was my mission. I had such an obsession to go drink. I couldn't wait to get there. Of course, I got completely smashed. And I first started with a client dinner early dinner. Got to do it early. Okay? Got to do it early. Early client dinner because you got to start early, dinner, and you go to more bars. And I went to bar. I had a colleague with me who was like, hey, we got a big day tomorrow. You know, sounds like the average tempered drinker. Had fun. Let's go home now. No, I'm not done yet. I'm not done. So I want to go back out again. So I drop him off, call my wife. I always called my wife, and that was never a good thing, by the way, because she always knew I was drinking. So of course, that makes me even further mad. And I basically go from bar to bar to bar to bar. I was a blackout drinker. I drive a car off a freeway into a concrete wall, and I total the car. And I walk away from that accident, okay? I am back in jail, of course. I am completely humiliated one more time, again, over and over and over again. But there was something, like my relationship with my wife was done, okay? My relationship with myself was done. I literally thought I was going to die. That's where I was. I thought I would die. And so I go home and I call my first sponsor. And my first sponsor tells me, he's like, you didn't kill anybody. You didn't kill yourself. You know, you're still alive. You know, I didn't know if I'd have my job. I didn't know what was going to happen, right? I was full of fear. I was just absolutely full of fear. But I knew one thing. I knew I had to get my butt back in this room. And I knew I had to change the way I was approaching this program, okay? Because the way I was approaching this program was I was the guy that sat on that chair before the door. That was me, okay? That doesn't work, okay? I can assure you that doesn't work. And I was not the guy that was going to take your phone number and call you. That's just the way, you know, I would take the number, never call you, okay? I couldn't do that. I couldn't develop a relationship with another man. I couldn't do it, you know? And I knew the first thing I wanted to do is I wanted you to know who I was. So I went to meetings and I shared right in the beginning. I shared right away. There was no alternative. It says in the book, this is a life and death errand. I absolutely believe that. So there was no way that I could do anything differently. And I proceeded to follow those steps. And I proceeded to dive in them as quickly as I possibly could. And I dug and crawled through it, and I said I was going to be completely honest because now I was willing to accept help. I couldn't do that before. I was absolutely willing to accept help, right? I was willing to let you know who I was, and I was willing to determine and take your suggestions and listen to you and follow the path, right? And so miraculous things started to happen because as I went through my surrender process, by the way, all the steps, I started to see a different light. This hole that was sitting up here started to get filled because I was maybe 4 or 5 months sober and I was sponsoring men, okay, that all of a sudden I could see what other men were going through, how they were handling their challenges of their life, how they were living a lie, how they thought they could cover things up, right? And it taught me just a tremendous, valuable lesson, you know? I mean, it was unbelievable how it created a shift in my whole life. It created an absolute shift in my whole life. And suddenly all that fear started to disappear. And I started to feel as though it was worth living again. And, you know, when my children were growing up, I was an absent father. I may have been there for the games, but I was absent. I wasn't there. I just wasn't there. And because I was always thinking about me, what I wanted to do, what I wanted to get out of life. And it wasn't sitting at a game watching some kid. That I say that now and it kind of hurts because I would do anything to see them today, do anything they are doing, they're doing. That's the shift that's occurred, right? I mean, I was so full of self-centeredness that it was all about, now that's gone, right? And that's a result of men in this room helping me through the process, right? And, so that's the beauty of it. I believe that, you know, one thing that helped me through, so as I started going through my ninth step, which is the ultimate step of surrender, when you're sitting across from another human being and you're actually sharing, you know, the wrongs that you had done to others and what you had done to them, the grace that comes from those shares is amazing, right? It's amazing what happens. So don't miss out on that. If you've got anything hidden behind that little thing you haven't done yet, go do it. Because it says all. Go do it. Make it happen. I mean, that's when we get the gift of freedom. And that's really what I want. I want to be totally free. Because if I have anything that comes up, you know what happens? It's this little teeny bit of dishonesty that starts to creep into my life. And that dishonesty starts to creep in and it starts to expand a little bit further and starts to expand a little bit further. And then it starts to take over my life. I can't allow that to happen. So what do I do, right? I literally have to stay in action, right? Faith without works is what? Dead, right? It says in the book on page 88, more action, right? More action. That means we can't stop. So it tells me, it gives me such a layout there. What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to watch for stuff that comes up in my life if I go through the 10th step. I'm supposed to do what? I'm supposed to ask, right? I'm supposed to ask somebody to actually help me. I'm supposed to ask God to remove that from me. And then I'm supposed to discuss it with somebody. You know, it's teaching me what I... Because if I don't do that, this wall comes up. If I begin to do that, suddenly I find out that, you know what? I'm not unique. It's not just me. Everybody else is dealing with this stuff. And, you know, that's the part that's incredible. And then as I get prepared, right, in the evening, what do? I review my day, you know. And when I wake up, upon awakening, what do? I begin to ask for some help and guidance, right, that I be shown through this prayer and meditation process that I'm prepared for the day. If I don't do that, my day usually is pretty crummy. Something's going to happen, it's going to get pretty crummy. If I'm on the beam and I'm centered with God, my life is pretty good that day, right? Because then it's not about me. It's about God's will, not mine. I have to make sure I'm practicing that on a daily basis. And if I stop for a day or two or three, I know I'm going to feel it. And it's going to be awful. You know, and I'll begin to see something happen. So, you know, how do I stay, you know, in this practice? What do I do? First of all, I'm very open to things today. I just went through a 30-day challenge with another man, and it looked at, you know, me as a individual, me as a spouse, me as a brother, me as a husband, okay, and me as a son. And where am I in the spectrum of my life in that regard? How well am I doing? So every day there was this little video thing, right? And it kind of gave me a big challenge. And it made me look at my life and where am I right now? And what am I doing, right? So this is another avenue, right? Another way to kind of look a little bit further and peel back the onion, because, you know, that's the part that I believe in. I believe in repeated inventories to look at peeling it back, because I was so good at covering it all up. Some guys can come into AA and actually go through a thorough process, and they're good. You know, that's not me. I don't know why, but that was not my... When you try this program 9 times and you fail 9 times, there's something wrong, okay? There's something really wrong, and you got to make sure that you're doing the active work to make that happen. And I've done another thing called a life review, which is similar to the steps, but it's a little bit different. But it opened me up to some other areas too that I was a little bit, you know, blocked in. And so all that is what? Seeking the truth. It's seeking God. It's seeking the truth. It's trying to take a look at what's happening in my life. How am I showing up today? You know? I mean, when you get up in the morning, how are you showing up? You know? Are you prepared for the day? Are you prepared to live your life sober? Are you really going to be sober? Are you taking God with you? Or are you on your own? Because I can tell you, every time I'm on my own, I'm in trouble. Right? When I bring God along with me, the chances are that he's always going to be the guiding light for me, right? Always going to be the guiding. If my thoughts are centered in God, always my actions will be better. Okay? If my thoughts are centered on Glenn, always I'm going to be in trouble. And I'm going to be wondering why I'm full of fear. Why can't I handle this at work? Why can't my wife do such and such? Why can't, you know, so-and-so do something? I mean, that's what happens, right? And when I begin to change that and turn that around, then suddenly I get find peace. I think one of the most important things for alcoholics is to carry the message. And we carry the message through the service work that we do. And to see another man that comes in this door and that is struggling with life and trying to find the answer, and to see that man actually get restored to sanity and be able to be another productive human being to carry this message further, you know, is awesome. It's awesome. And so many men miss that opportunity. I have learned so much from sponsoring men about my own recovery. You know, that's the beauty of it. So, you know, if you haven't tried it yet, please do. Please get out there and just grab onto somebody and walk them through the steps. You know, all you got to do is take this big book and actually, everywhere it has a question, you just kind of deal with it. That's all you got to do. You know, take the statements, turn them into questions. That's all you got to do. It tells us exactly what to do in these 164 pages. And sometimes we miss that because we think we can do AA by just coming into the rooms and sitting in a room and discussing what we think is the step process versus actually doing the step process. And so that's kind of what I, you know, the quote that Tom read before, it was kind of like, yeah, like, where are you complacent in your program today? Right? What's happening in your life today that you're complacent, that you're holding back, that you're not giving, that you're taking? You know, where is that happening in your life today? And what are you doing about it, right? Are you sitting there and isolating about it, or are you sharing about it, right? And what I found in my life is that the more that I open up to that and the more that I share about it, I get such great gifts in return. It just comes flooding back to me. And that's the beauty of the program, right? It's the beauty of the step work. And so you take a guy like me that never thoroughly did it. And there's a statement I'll read on, you know, we read How It Works all the time. And, you know, it just becomes, you know, half of us probably don't even listen to it. We're thinking about everything else because we're so stuck in ourselves. You know, Michael read it and it was like, it goes right by, right? And so let's kind of look at this for one thing, okay. If you have decided you want what we have, number one, do you know what we have? Right? Great question, right? Turn that into a question. And are willing to go to any length to get it. What is it? What is it for you today? Right? I mean, that's a powerful little word, isn't it? It. Am I willing to go to any lengths to get it? You know? Then you are ready to take certain steps. Only then are you ready to take certain steps. Right? Because, you know, and there's so many times it mentions it in the book about going to any length. Right? And that's what I discovered when I walked back into the rooms. I was desperate and willing to go to any length to get it, and you know, it's been a blessing for sure for me. So I hope that has given you what you were looking for. So thanks for letting me share, and thanks for having me tonight. I appreciate it.